Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining our Q3 2022 results presentation. Before we start, I would like to draw your attention to our forward-looking statement in page two. At the end of the presentation, we will have a Q&A session. With this, let me hand over to our CEO, Jochen Eickholt. Jochen?
Thanks, Cristina. Thanks to all of you. A very good morning. In some parts of Europe, it's still very early in the morning. Thanks for joining us. This morning, I have the pleasure to be joined by our CFO, Beatriz Puente, and we would like to take you through the results of the Q3 of this fiscal year. We try to also give an update on the financial targeting for this fiscal year, as well as presenting more details on part of our activities. Also, after our little presentation, we shall be happy to take your questions at the end of the call. Now let's look at the Q3 results. I'm happy to announce that we got a record order backlog, which now totals up to 34 billion euros. That is led by the strong performance in offshore, but it's also seeing contributions from a recovery in onshore, certainly versus the last and the previous quarter. Our Q3 revenue was in the range of 2.4 billion euros. That equals a 10% reduction year-on-year. The EBIT margin was at -14.1%. The performance was impacted by the continuing discussion around our 5.X platform. We also continued to see supply chain constraints. We of course do have higher cost of energy, materials, and logistics. We also saw difficulties in the availabilities of key turbine components. We had port congestions and further supply delays. We also had then additional quality issues, specifically more from the legacy platforms, which hit us in the area of service. Services EBIT margin is then also going to recover for the fourth quarter of this fiscal year, but that was a hit. As for the debt profile, Siemens Gamesa has a net debt of 2.3 billion euros and continues to enjoy a good access to capital. The ongoing sale of the asset element of our business in Southern Europe, the wind farm development, that is targeted to be concluded in Q4 of this fiscal year, and we expect an EBIT contribution out of this of 540 million. The targets for fiscal 2022 thus had to be revised to reflect the ongoing market challenges, those ones I just referred to. In fiscal 2022, the revenue is projected to be at approximately -9% year-on-year in comparison to previous year. The EBIT margin is expected to be at -5.5%. Mistral, our company program Mistral, is expected to help to stabilize short-term performance for 2022 and 2023, and also beyond that. As a program is designed to help us to deliver on our long-term vision. This includes various optimization activities. Now, sector forecasts are supported by the climate change and, of course, the market as such, in our view, continues to be promising mid to long term. Short term, we are facing the difficulties, also some of our competitors are facing. On the next slide, we see the continued, in my view, excellence in performance in the area of ESG. We have received a top-ranking result from all major agencies. If I now take or may take one of the examples here, the Standard & Poor's ESG evaluation gave us some 83 out of 100%, placing us at the number two in Spain and the number 12 globally. This, in our view, is illustrating our continuous efforts, and it will remain to be a focus for our activities going forward. Now, with a view of the commercial activities in Q3, as I was indicating, we have a record order backlog in the range of 34 billion euros. That reflects an increase of 4%. And the order intake of 3.5 billion euros for Q3 was boosted by the strong offshore performance and, as I said, the recovery of the onshore activity. In terms of backlog, we have around 80% of the backlog in markets where we continue to see growth possibilities and trends, and that's, in my view, a very positive sign. Next, please. On the onshore side, we saw a order intake recovery up to a level of 1.2 gigawatts. If some in the audience remember the discussions we had in previous calls, we apply and continue to apply a selective commercial strategy, which means we really focus on the more attractive part of the business. The order intake as such, however, is aligned with various stabilization and ramp-up activities. We did experience longer negotiation phases with the customers, but also see an upward trend in pricing, and that is here now shown on the graph. We are combining price increases with cost mitigation measures, of course, in the end of the day, to help us to develop the business going forward. But if I recall the figures correctly, also this 0.89 perhaps is a number which is slightly too positive, because as you can imagine, there are also things like variations orders in there, which kind of are different in nature to the kind of first time booking of a number. But even if we would subtract those effects, the trend is clearly positive and takes us back to pricing levels of the year 2017 or 2016. Offshore. We continue to maintain our leading position in offshore. We see a combined backlog and pipeline view of some 16 gigawatts, and this includes roughly 8 gigawatts of the orders for the SG14 megawatt machine. In the third quarter, we saw a new preferred supply agreement in Poland and also maintained a strong position in the UK. Some will remember the fourth round of the CFD auction, and there we've been putting ourselves into, in the end of the day, a rather favorable position. Next slide. Just over half of the company's order backlog is allocated to the service business unit, and that service business unit as such then continues to show strong growth. Service has now some 84 gigawatts of fleet under maintenance, and we have the retention rate of the customers of 68%, so that, in my view, continues to be a strong pillar of our business. The figures of Q3 were impacted by the development which I indicated, but perhaps on more commercial details, let me hand over to Beatrice now.
Thank you, Jochen, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. So on page 12, we have the summary of the group financial performance for the period. Revenue for the group declined roughly 10%, reaching 2.4 billion euros in Q3, and roughly a 12% decline in the nine-month period, reaching 6.4 billion euros. Revenue performance is the result of the impact of the supply chain disruptions that we continue to see, with a lack of critical components and also late deliveries. Also, the lower than expected progress on the manufacturing of the ramp-up of our 5X platform, that also all in are impacting our project execution, installation and also commissioning. At EBIT level, the group ended the quarter with the losses of roughly 343 million euros, a negative margin of 14.1% of over revenues, and losses of 957 million euros in the 9 months of the fiscal year. The group EBIT reflects the challenges that we face in the 5X platform, including manufacturing delays, inflation of material and transportation costs, and also the impact of supply chain disruptions on manufacturing and project execution and delivery. Considering the higher cost and also the updated assumptions on the market, because of course market conditions, on valuing our onshore backlog, the total negative impact in the quarter has been 185 million euros, mainly, of course, related to the cost new assumptions in onerous contract. And last but not least, also our EBIT is impacted as a result of lower revenues and, of course, resulting in a lower absorption of our overheads. In addition, during Q3, the group also experienced, as Johan mentioned, additional cost coming from higher failures and also the cost of repair in several components of our legacy onshore platforms in North America. And this impact has had been seen in the service activity and explains also the low margin in the quarter that we foresee to have again in Q4 standard margins above 20%. Below the EBIT line, we see an increase in integration and restructuring costs, reaching total amount of 62 million euros in the quarter, and the increase is due to the ongoing actions on the optimization of our manufacturing capacity. Regarding financial expenses, the group registered in the quarter financial income of roughly 5 million euros, and also totaling 16 million euros in the nine-month period. And also, as we explained on the Q2 results, this has a positive impact due to the higher interest rates that, of course, when we update the value of our provisions, provide this positive impact of roughly 17.7 million euros in the quarter and roughly 46 million euros in the nine-month period. Tax expenses amounted in Q3 of a tax income of 5 million euros, and in total 9 months, a negative tax expense of 28 million euros. This is as a result of the group incurring in losses in market where the company as of today is not capitalizing deferred tax assets. And also, of course, we have profits in countries with a higher tax rate. As a result of operating performance and the reasons I explained before, net income of the group amounted in the period on Q3 to a loss of 446 million euros and a loss of 1.2 billion euros in the nine-month period. Moving to the balance sheet, the group has invested 183 million euros in CAPEX in Q3 and roughly 503 million euros in the nine-month period. This is in line with our expectations and very important, roughly 65% of the CAPEX has been deployed in offshore to maintain our key competitive advantage. Regarding the group net debt, I will cover that later on in the next pages. So we move to page 13 to give you more color on the revenue performance. And as we already explained, group revenues, I will focus on the segment. WTG revenues decline was driven both in the Q3 and also in the nine-month period by the lower manufacturing and project execution activity. Also has been impacted by the challenges that we have on the 5X platform and also because of the supply chain disruptions with significant bottlenecks in critical WTE components. And of course, it's causing us late deliveries for us. Offshore manufacturing activity grew in the quarter at roughly 15% year-on-year. But the installation activity was done, driven mainly also causing lower revenues on offshore segment in the quarter. Service revenue of 1.5 billion euros in the first 9 months was up 9% year-on-year, fully in line also with our group expectations. So moving to slide 14, we see the EBIT performance of the group in Q3 and the nine-month period. And as I explained before, has been heavily impacted by cost inflation, that not only, of course, in raw materials, but as Jochen said, also in the cost of energy and transportation. Also, extra cost because of the supply chain disruptions, and also the challenges that we have on the ramp-up volumes of the 5X, despite the team is focusing all the effort in improving the difficult situation that we have on the supply chain. Also, as I mentioned before, the impact of lower revenues is also driven by external and internal challenges. And of course, we have idle capacity increasing, you know, our or decreasing our absorption of the fixed cost. In addition, on Q3, the performance has been impacted by cost of higher than expected failures on components. And of course, you know, the cost of repairs in legacy onshore platforms, especially in North America. This, the total amount we have provided for you to have the impact, roughly 113 million euros related to these quality issues, with significant impact on the service division. And as I said before, I strongly believe we count on service to deliver the standard, you know, margin on four, which we consider that it will be above, significantly above 20%. Also, as a result of all this, we have to update also the backlog of mainly onshore profitability with this higher cost and new market conditions. And that's the reason of the impact of 185 million euros, mainly related to cost deviations in onerous contract. If we move to page 15, I want to cover the cash situation of the group and also the leverage. As we also mentioned on Q2, we foresee that Q3 will be the quarter with the peak of the leverage, and has been the case, roughly 2.3 billion euros. The main reason for that is the increase of working capital of roughly 765 million euros. This is mainly reflect the early production and also, of course, the delays that we are having on installation, and to a lower extent also the safety stocks, both also being impacted by the supply chain conditions that we have. Also, of course, our cash flow is deteriorated by the operational performance, and also because the investments that I mentioned before, CapEx of roughly 503 million euros. It's important to say that, as Jochen mentioned, we are very well on track on the disposal of wind farm business. And for us, you know, we foresee to close the transaction early September with a net cash contribution of roughly 550 million euros, and also, of course, significant contribution on EBIT as well of roughly 540 million euros. Last but not least, I will mention that we have roughly 4.5 billion euros in credit lines and loans. In Q1, we extended the maturity of our 2 billion euros credit line to 27. And in Q3, I want to highlight also we refinance all the short-term maturities, roughly 675 million euros that now are due by the end of 23, beginning of 24, as we share with you the pro forma new maturities, and very important with no change on the conditions. Also, during the period, we have drawn roughly 2.7 billion euros. We have a cash position of 1.2 billion euros, therefore roughly 3 billion euros in liquidity. And last, I will highlight that all the debt that we have on the credit lines have no covenants associated to our, you know, funding lines. And as you see here, after the refinancing, we have no short-term liquidity constraints. And now let me hand over to Jochen to cover the market outlook, our target for 22, and the initiatives of Mistral. Thank you.
Thanks, Beatriz. So now perhaps, as indicated, it's the time to give an update on the outlook for the sector and the company as such. As you see on this chart, the overall demand situation continues to be very strong. We see that there are ever-increasing, if you wish, outlooks for the size of the market in the different parts of the world. We see that, for instance, the European Parliament continues to back up 45% of the energy target, continues to back that 45% energy target in line with the RE power or repower EU plan. The German Parliament approves the Easter package, but there's the further packages yet to come. Please remember that in Germany there is a policy to have most of the legislative work being completed by the end of this year. Another prominent example is the latest CFD round in the UK, leading to the overall confirmation, if you wish, of another 10 gigawatt in demand, out of which 7 are in the field of offshore. I think it's relevant to mention that the mid to long-term perspective really is such that we see in offshore a major growth. We continue to see that growth. The pure growth rate figures as such are really tremendous. So in many cases, we believe we even have to answer the question of how one possibly can provide the related capacities. And that's right now also ongoing discussions between us and our customers. On the onshore side, it's a little bit different, but there also the market continues to be strong. Of course, challenges remain, and we have to see that despite all the positive outlooks, our industry, perhaps I can't even say that, but certainly I can speak for us, we are in a difficult situation. And if you now look at some of the numbers which are shown here on this chart, we may perhaps make it slightly understandable that under the given circumstances, the August target we would like to announce now on the EBIT pre-margin is reduced down to minus 5.5%, coming from the previous communication of minus 5.0%. Q3 was impacted by the numbers shown, specifically and on top of other effects, by additional effects coming from the legacy platforms hitting us in the service business that was discussed. But of course, we continue to see difficulties in the ramp-up, and we of course continue to also see effects from other influence factors like the COVID development or, for instance, also geopolitical tensions. The revenue guidance remains where it was, so we expect that to be in that range of minus 9.0%, to be more precise, and margins continue to be squeezed by all the different effects we were referring to also in the course of this presentation. Our onshore business, and that is what needs to be remembered, is still suffering from onerous contracts in many cases and also idle capacity in the end of the day driven by lower than anticipated volumes. We will carry out further assessment on the onshore legacy platforms to improve our commercial position. Still a risk of delays to customers' investment decisions is something we have to consider. We have actions in place to reach the long-term target of the plus or greater than 8% as indicated here on this chart. And the main lever or the main program or the main framework to achieving that is our Mistral program. Mistral program as such is looking at activities in, if you wish, three horizon levels. So first of all, we have to mitigate the ongoing headwinds. Rightfully so, they were specified in the past mostly by the ongoing 5X onshore platform ramp-up and the supply chain disruptions. Midterm, we will work on further optimizing the margins and address various further levers to improve on profitability and cash flow. We categorize that in the areas of the top line growth and the top line development. The competitive product as such must obviously also meet gross margin targets. Operational excellence is a thing we focus on a daily basis on, and lean structures and efficient capital are also leading to various additional measures. On top of that, we of course continue to look at further structural levers to address the full potential of our company mid to long term. So for instance, when it comes to the deployed technology in our turbine systems, or the setup of the supply chain, and also the operating models. Now, if I may take the last one here as a very good example, we intend to introduce a new operating model to our company by January the 1st next year. It is designed around a simplified and leaner company structure. We will have in the future a harmonization of the different technology developments. So we will have one technology development team across onshore, offshore, and service. And there wants to be the role of a CTO of our company introduced. When it comes to the chief operating officer, that function will include also the manufacturing and also the quality management activities. There also a further harmonization is attempted. And on the business side, the businesses, as they are the business units, they will focus on the sales, the project execution, the customer project execution, I have to say, and also the product roadmaps. And they will, of course, then in this context, maintain full P&L responsibility. I did observe that in the past we had established different structures across the regional setup of the businesses. So in the future, that will be harmonized. We will have one regional standardized setup for all the businesses. We, of course, continue to discuss capacity optimization when it comes to footprint and structure. And that happens across Siemens Gamesa globally. We transition many of the supply contracts rather to long-term or life cycle contracts, specifically when it comes to direct materials. We have seen that too much of, in this sense, short-term procurement, if you wish, is just seen to be too risky and too difficult to handle for us. And of course, I and even myself will focus a lot on the stabilization of the product development process and the product quality, and we'll do this by dedicated programs. Now, this as such indicates already that there is a substantial amount of complexity behind this, and this is why it's, even if the entire organization is focusing on this, still takes its time to become successful. Going forward, which is the next chart, going forward, we'd like to have the details of the new operating model finalized by October the 1st. We will certainly use the existing very good contact to also our social partners to have all the internationally related and important and needed negotiations in place. And the intention is to go live in January the 1st. So with that, allow me to summarize a little bit once more where we stand. We said we are going to kind of continue. This is in a way the the discussion we had in the very beginning on the key points. We continue to observe a strong order intake. We have a record order backlog. The results in Q3 were not as satisfactory as we were hoping to see them, but in the end of the day, the minus 14.1% are something we have to recognize and to acknowledge. We saw a continued good access to liquidity. We saw a very strong progress on our so-called asset sale. We have to adopt our fiscal year 22 targets. The most prominent example is the development of the minus 5.5% on the EBIT pre-margin in relation to previous communication, and perhaps sometimes underestimated in its effects. The Mistral program is now rolled out and will continue to substantially contribute to the development of our company. This happens under the overall good market outlook we observe and continue to observe. Thank you very much for this now, Christina.
Thank you, Jochen. With that, we are going to open the session to questions. If you could say your name and question, please try to ask no more than two questions.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The Q&A session starts now. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. We kindly request that you limit your questions to one per turn. Please be informed that in order to assure audio quality, we recommend that all questions will be asked from landlines. Thank you. The first question comes from Vivek Midha from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Thanks very much for taking my questions. If we're thinking to one question, could I maybe ask on the 2023 commentary? You've given us helpful color on 2023 EBIT margin. Would it be possible for you to give us any color on free cash flow next year and, you know, items like the onerous contract provision, CapEx, and so on? Thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Good morning, and thank you for the question. Regarding 23 kind of a new target guidance, we'll provide, you know, more color as a standard process with year-end numbers. So we'll provide, of course, revenue, EBIT, and of course, as you said, you know, leverage or just cash flow generation of the company. So I will provide that, as I said, you know, after year-end results.
Okay, understood. Thank you. In that case, would it be possible to just quickly ask on the assumptions around input costs within the 2023 commentary? So what are the assumptions around freight costs evolution? And yeah, is there any benefit at all in 23 or is it in 24 to see, for example, lower steel costs? Thank you.
Well, we continue to observe the effects of the overall situation, which means that in some commodities, we continue to see the high price levels for 23. In some commodities, we see an improvement on those. In total, and as the picture is showing for us, in total, the pure material cost will continue to go up. And that is even in spite of the effects that we right now, for instance, in some commodities see decreasing prices. We still also have to bear in mind that the overall systems and the, how shall I say, the trading of the commodities through the different stages of value add, that adds a timeline or a time lag and a time delay effect, which then totals that up. On the freight cost side, I think we see a relaxation of the situation.
That's helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mark Freshney from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you for taking my questions. Firstly, on the UK CFD round, where 7 gigawatts of offshore cleared and some capacity was not in there, so I think it's fair to say we've probably got 8 gigawatts. Is it fair to say that with the exception of perhaps one project, Siemens Gamesa is preferred supplier to pretty much most of it, you know, 7 gig of the 8. And just secondly, on the actual contracting, I think you spoke about this a bit, but one thing is the price, the other thing is indexation cost plus. Can you talk about how rigorously you're imposing those terms and whether you're enforcing them? Thank you.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Mark. Yes, indeed, we feel in the end of the day in a rather good position for the UK. And it is a little bit confirming the strategy we had. And we feel that this will clearly help us specifically to maintain our market position in offshore. On the material indexation, or perhaps in a broader context, the inflation compensation, we are very rigorous with new projects. There is a bundle of measures typically which is going to be applied, and I was referring to that also in the most recent, in the other calls. Of course, depending a little bit on the situation of also our customer, we have to make sure that the risks of inflation are covered, and there is by now the application of various levers to make sure that this is happening. We did adopt the risk contingencies in our projects. We have a material-specific discussion sometimes with our suppliers. We use the element of indexation on the commodity side, and there are further elements to that. But believe me, we are very rigorous on applying these levers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Supriya Subramanian from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hello, hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. Just a follow-on on the indexation clause. I just wanted to get your thoughts on how sticky do you think these price increases are that you have taken in a world of, let's say, declining raw material prices. I understand that the impact may not come immediately in 2023, but do you think that ASPs get adjusted down more quickly, or do you think, given that, you know, the price hike came with quite a bit of lag versus raw material prices, you'll be able to command higher prices for a slightly longer period of time? And my second sort of quick question is just the 113 million charges that we took in the service business. Is that a one-time? Are we done with those the breakdowns and costs related to that, or do you forecast some more costs coming in the next few quarters? Thank you.
I will start with your second question, and then first one, you know, we'll cover, you know, by Johan. Regarding, you know, the 113 million euros, yes, we consider that it's not recurrent, you know, for us, you know, it's more a one-off. That impact is split between onshore and service, you know, in the Q3. And for us, we are taking a very proactive, let's say, measures or improving, you know, the quality of our platforms. As we said, you know, it's mainly focused on legacy onshore platforms,
right.
But we will proactively address those quality issues with a strong, you know, campaign in the coming, you know, quarter.
And could you, just quickly, any ballpark indication of between the onshore equipment and service, what's the breakdown between the 113 million?
No, I mean, we prefer, you know, as very sensitive information, we prefer not to split. But as I said, you know, it's heavily impacting also our service performance. And what we can give you color is that we foresee to have a service, you know, fourth quarter quite strong, very, very strong. And going back to levels above, you know, 20%, you know, margin.
All right. Perhaps
on the other part of the question, now what we did apply and continue to apply is a rather rigorous monitoring of the so-called attractiveness of a project, which covers then obviously the whole set of T's and C's, and also the pricing in relation to this. And in this discussion, we try to apply a concept of what we call selectivity. So projects have to be above certain thresholds under various aspects in order to be approved by us. And that is a process which we newly introduced with my arrival here in this company, and that continues to be a core element of our business activity when it comes to the overall improvements of the projects. So we have to observe all the various aspects of price increases and inflation, which we discussed, and that we continue to expect also for the upcoming periods. We feel that the measures, the protective measures, if you wish, we have put in there increasing or including the price increases, that takes us onto a positive path. But of course, we are not here the ones who can speculate about the future. And if I watch out the press articles and the press communication, then we have to see that we probably are well advised to remain careful here. Clearly, however, when it comes to the pricing, specifically in onshore, we see a positive trend.
Okay. Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Sean McLaughlin from HSBC. Please go ahead. Mr. Sean, please go ahead.
Sorry, I was on mute. A question on component failures, just building on the previous question. What were these? Why were they so unexpected and expensive? What is the risk that we see further similar failures on other legacy machines?
Well, we do observe the component failures in typically two or three broader categories. One is relates to the blade technologies. So sometimes we see the so-called wrinkles or cracks, if you wish, after some period of time, not always to be predicted. We then see also difficulty in some parts of the electrical system, both the generator and the converter systems, and those also have to be rectified. I think this is the rough categories of what we're looking at. What we have to establish is that, sometimes these turbines already are a couple of years old. This is why also for us it's in the sense of the responsible business unit, rather a service discussion. But of course, those problems are not originated in the service business. And that sometimes makes it difficult to, first of all, also establish the problem as such on a technical level and then put corrective action in place. We continue to believe that the situation as such obviously is covered by the numbers we indicated on, but if we have questions where components fail in an unpredicted manner, obviously please imagine what sort of sometimes even mid to long-term evaluation is needed to establish root cause and the right level of corrective action.
Understood. So if some of these turbines are 2 years old, are these actually still under warranty?
Well, we have different terms and conditions on the warranty side. Warranty conditions go up to, I think, 2 years, sometimes up to 5 years even, and then typically kick in, at least this would be our hope, service contracts, and those are then the framework to rectify those issues.
Understood. And lastly, if I can just specify whether these were in onshore or offshore turbines.
Well, the things we are discussing mostly when it comes to the current discussion are around onshore turbines. Onshore older turbines. So onshore, not 5X, if you wish.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's mainly, just to clarify, it's mainly onshore. I mean, the things that we are discussing on the platforms, and as we said, 2 years for onshore, 5 years for offshore, and of course the service warranty goes up to 35 years. For you to have all the information.
Well, the service contract.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question comes from Gael Dubray from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. Thanks very much for the questions. Could you elaborate a bit more on the so-called decisive actions you're taking to turn around the business, in particular regarding potential headcount reduction? I mean, generally speaking, do you think it would make sense to cut jobs to reduce losses you know, considering that the market will likely pick up again in a year or two? So that's question number one. And then I'd like to have a couple of clarifications, please. So firstly, on the revenue guidance at -9%, is this now fully updated for currencies or not? And then secondly, on the 113 million charge, I think I'm getting a little bit confused here. So it's booked mainly in services, but also in onshore. So is this, you know, fully in addition to the 185 million provision, or is it included, or is there a part of that included within the 185 million provision? Thank you.
Well, thanks, Guy. Let me start with the first part of the question, and then perhaps the FX effects and the detailed numbers are going to be answered by Beatrice. So what you describe is indeed part of the difficulty. So we definitely do feel that it doesn't make sense to reduce, let's say, headcount capacities when we foreseeably need them again. So this is part of the difficulty. Still, we do believe that in some parts of our organization, there are capacities way beyond the actual need, and that needs to be rectified. Now, that is true for part of the manufacturing portfolio as well as part of the overhead or administration or structure of our organization. So this is what we mostly look at. We will continue to work on detailing that and get in touch with our social partners to have all the right and relevant and legally binding and legally necessary discussions. But what you describe is really part of that difficulty we find ourselves in, and this is why it's not so easy to come up at rather short notice with the idea of having to slash that and that capacity, and off we go.
And Gael, regarding your question, I think the one that you referred to, the revenue, if the new kind of target for the -9% is always, you know, we provide that on a comparable basis. And of course, the reason for going to the lower end of our former, you know, target is mainly related to the issues that we have on year-to-date Q3 results. To your second question, is like how much of the amount that we have on the 113 million euros are, of course, embedded in the -185. As we said before, we prefer not to provide, you know, the breakdown of that, you know, within, you know, on and offshore, sorry, on and service. But of course, you know, a portion of the onshore, you know, hit is fully impacting the 185, because this is related to our projects that are onerous, mainly, as we said, are impacting projects in North America because of the reasons that Jochen said. So that portion has been, of course, causing this 185 update on the backlog. So a portion of that is hitting the onerous contract.
Okay, thanks very much. Can I have a quick follow-up on the headcount question? So what is the share of the workforce today which is in the structure, you know, in the overhead, administration and the likes?
I'm not... No, I mean, we try to communicate on that to try to make sure that we are not confusing, because our structures are slightly more complicated. What we discuss typically is that we would like to centralize some of those functions, and by that streamline the, how shall I say, line of command, if you wish, in those functions, specifically when it comes to CTO and COO. Now, that has the potential that we can become more efficient, and it also has the potential that, for instance, the number of different technological solutions for similar purposes is going to be reduced. So this is part of the effects. Of course, that then in the end of the day also needs to contribute to some cost saving, and that is what we're targeting at, and this is what makes the approach we follow slightly more differentiated. So the centralization of the functions in many cases will lead to an optimization of processes, of the needed capacities, also of the tool landscape.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Akash Gupta from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good morning, everybody, and thanks for your time. My question is on onshore wind business, and maybe Jochen, as part of this new organization structure, are you looking to revisit your onshore footprint and maybe becoming more selective, especially after your U.S. competitor announced last week that they are stepping away from international opportunities and focusing more on North America? Like, are you also considering similar set of action in your onshore business to focus more on the regions which are more profitable than the others?
Yes, we clearly observe, we clearly monitor the regional development, and it leads to already us refraining from specific opportunities where they are not sufficient or sensibly profitable, and that may lead to further consequences, but that is not established yet. But Akash, the thinking, of course, is right. We indeed have set up a system for us where we focus on those markets on a, let's say, a smaller number of core markets where we want to be successful on. So there, so there is this effect.
And then maybe a follow-up on offshore business. I think you earlier said in your comment regarding capacity discussion with customers. So the question I have is that if you look at your market share in the UK, especially after UK CFD auction, do you have enough capacity already to meet these requirements, or do you need to expand further in your capacity to meet your order commitments from the latest auction?
Well, so far we see that our plans are kind of in line with our, how shall I say, success in those discussions. But going forward, I clearly see that to change. So I foresee capacity shortfalls in our industry.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Deepa Venkateswaran from Bernstein. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. So I was wondering whether you could give us an update about the takeover by Siemens Energy, and particularly I think around the time when they launched the offer. We didn't have the results of the UK CFD auctions, you know, the recent Inflation Reduction Act from the US. So a few other events that have happened which would definitely work better for the medium-term outlook. So just wondering, is there any process or to kind of take these into account in the the minority buyout process? And maybe just a side impact, you in your slides, you didn't talk about the Inflation Reduction Act from the US. So any comments on how that impacts your operations would be helpful.
So first of all, the takeover process, please forgive us that we are not Siemens Energy. The offer was announced. The offer right now is in its approval process by CNMV, which is the Spanish finance market the supervision authority. I would assume that this approval process moves on. The next step then would be that approval, if it moves on, and then that offer would be out. Beyond this, it's very difficult for us to comment on potential next steps, because we are not the party who actually is deciding here. So please forgive us that that perhaps is something which I may refer to, or which I may redirect to our colleagues of Siemens Energy. Now, when it comes to the various elements...
Sorry, please go on.
Now, when it comes to the element of cost or inflation compensation and cost compensation, that is an ongoing exercise. I was, I think, rather clear about our policy. Of course, that policy has regional flavors. We have to see under which circumstances what is thinkable. But I have to tell you that the most recent developments in the U.S., that is this infrastructure bill discussion, that, in my view, is something which will have an extremely positive outlook onto the development of our whole industry. And since we are a player in the U.S. as well, we also hope to benefit from that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Lucas Ferrani from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for the time. My question again would be on the service division. You have also one of your key peers which highlighted issues in kind of the related to older legacy platforms. I just wanted to ask if you see this kind of problem you're having at the moment bring any change in your long-term assumptions for service. Could it be the case that potentially we need more maintenance for the turbines, especially at end of life? Does that bring any kind of changes in the way you're seeing the way you price the warranty? And also just to comment again on what you said regarding service in Q4, you said you expect to recover but still be impacted. Could you just detail a little bit what that means? Thank you.
Well, thank you. Well, right now, not. I mean, what we foresee for the future when it comes to the new types of turbines, that the needed service work will become more sophisticated. So that, in my view, means that we typically find ourselves in a rather better position than in the past to actually take over the responsibility for those service activities. So this is rather a mid-term development. Yeah. So the turbines become more complex and the service works will become more sophisticated. Regarding the quality deficits, I don't see any major change regarding the models we operate according to. And that so far is, in my view, really foreseen in our business planning. So therefore, I would not see that as a trend.
And regarding your second question, what do we meant by the impact on service, you know, profitability? Of course, we have the hit on Q3. What we meant is that Q4 standalone basis, you know, service will have deliver a margin quite above, you know, 20%. And of course, on a year to date or for a full you know, fiscal year, of course, we cannot catch up with the impact of Q3. Yeah. But what we mean is that we see a very strong, you know, performance continues to be on the service, you know, business.
But perhaps a slightly more generous comment. I can certainly speak for our company, and the mode our company is right now in is not sustainable. So what is needed in the end of the day is something which we typically refer to as inflation compensation, but you could also make it even more simple and could say we need to have higher revenue for the megawatt, or we need to have higher prices. And that continues to be a problem, in my view, even for the entirety of the industry, if you look at the results of our competitors, but certainly it is a problem for us. So we need to find solutions in order to get a better result. Specifically, when you look at the overall situation the whole wind sector finds itself in, so there are so far obviously players who rather benefit from many of the more recent developments, and others don't. And that needs to be considered because in the end of the day, I continue to believe that we need to play a strong role in whatever there is called the energy transition.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from AJ Patel from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and thank you for the presentation. Apologies if maybe asking a question that's already been answered. I cut out, so I had to dial in. So I've got two issues I wanted to discuss. Firstly, could you give us a bridge of how the underlying margin is moving from Q3 to Q4 to be consistent with the full-year guidance? So even if you take off the disposal expected in Q4, there's a sizable improvement. So just a better understanding of the components would be really helpful. And then on the second side, it's more sort of understanding the debt. What are your expectations for the full year in terms of the components that will move to improve the situation? So, you know, how much of a working capital reversal, for example, are you expecting? So that we can just get a better understanding of how you'll leave this year going into next year, where you've already indicated that margins would be negative, and just trying to understand, you're clearly in a company that is in recovery. What capital needs are you going to need for that journey?
Thank you for your question. Regarding, you know, kind of bridge on Q3 to Q4, we try to give you more insight on the Q4 performance with two things. As we said, we update the target for our revenues and EBIT, you know, for the full year with the minus 9% on a comparable basis, EBIT target of minus 5.5%. And we provide you, so in theory, you can build that bridge. We provide you the implied contribution of the disposal of the wind farm business with roughly a contribution on EBIT of 540 million euros. So that will explain, you know, how we will improve. Of course, Q4 will be on a year-to-date basis. Our results of Q3 will be foreseen to be the lowest throughout the year because you will have the positive contribution of this transaction. It will contribute in everything, revenues, EBIT, and cash. And actually, the figure for cash is quite similar to the potential, you know, EBIT contribution, 550 million euros in cash. So again, you know, for us, you know, as we stated in the previous, you know, Q2, Q3 will be the highest leverage for the company because we foresee to have the 550 million euros cash in, as I said, you know, beginning of September, and also some improvement on that will help us also on the working capital. We will provide, you know, guidance target, you know, for 23. As I said, you know, with year-end results, and therefore also any need for strengthen the balance sheet, also we will provide at that time, of course, based on a new outlook for 23 and how we see the market on the coming year.
Thank you. The next question comes from Mark Freshney from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you. I have a follow-up question regarding the patent dispute issues. I know it's something that's gone on for decades, particularly with one of your particularly litigious competitor who uses it as a commercial tool. But could you give us an overview of where we are on the patent disputes and any markets where it may be inhibiting your ability to win projects? Thank you.
Well, right now, thank you very much. Let me try to simplify that matter a little. Indeed, there are different players in our sector, and some follow a policy to use patent-related litigation as a tool. We feel a little bit like being dragged into some of those discussions, and that's not necessarily our intention, but anyway, it is like it is. We have two cases or two principal structures, what's being discussed. We have some rather software-related activities where right now we continue to be in dispute in various markets. However, so far, my view is that we kind of manage the situation rather well. So far there is a rather mixed picture in recognizing the validity of the related patents, but we've already established turnarounds on our side should that in the end of the day be the ruling. Then there's a second family of discussions which are more hardware related, and that is what the most recent ruling was about in the US. And that now clearly states that there is a hardware concept violation of a big North American competitor in the relation of our or in conjunction with our patents. The first indications were and the first rulings were that there should be some kind of licensing agreement in place, and the rules or the North American judges even established a sort of level of where those licenses should sit. And this is now part of the discussions and ongoing discussions. We feel ourselves right now from these, you know, patent-related disputes in a rather positive, in a rather good situation.
Thank you very much. Well done.
Okay, thank you. I think we are going to conclude the call now. Johan, I don't know if you want to...
No, I think we tried to bring across some key messages. As always, we are also open for further communication if that is sensible and helpful. We would like to thank you very much for all the good questions and also for the ongoing observation of the fate of our company, and I'd like to continue that discussion at the planned and foreseen dates and possibilities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone, and have a good holiday break, and happy to follow up with any questions you might have.